Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 5th, 2020. Coming up this hour.
A 10th day of protest brings peaceful rallies to most cities, though clashes continue in New York.
Wall Street awaits a U.S. jobs report likely to show unemployment nearing 20%.
Global stocks rally on stimulus measures from Europe and word of the next rescue package from Congress.
New York City prepares for phase one of reopening, while Governor Cuomo urges protesters to get tested for the coronavirus. I'm Amy Morris. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Another roadblock for the baseball season. The NBA return is set, and Drew Brees apologizes.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by SEI. Asset managers don't get results that are off the charts when their solutions are off the shelf. Learn how SEI's operating platform can turn infrastructure into a competitive advantage at seic.com/IMS.
And U.S. futures are gaining ahead of the monthly jobs report, 501 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 28 points this morning. Dow futures up 336. NASDAQ futures up 51. The DAX in Germany is up 2%. So is the CAC in Paris. And the FTSE 100 up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 0.83%. Yield on the two-year, 0.19%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.5% or 57 cents at $37.98 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.7% or $12.40 at $17.15 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1330 against the dollar. This data check brought to you by BNY Mellon's Pershing. Learn why the world's most sophisticated advisory firms and broker-dealers rely on Pershing to help them improve profitability, create efficiency, attract talent, and manage risk at Pershing.com. Nathan.
Karen, we begin in Minneapolis, where hundreds gathered to honor the memory of George Floyd. The memorial was attended by political leaders, musicians, actors, and human rights advocates from across the country and was capped off by a fiery eulogy from the Reverend Al Sharpton.
It is not a normal funeral. It is not a normal circumstance, but it's too common, and we need to deal with it.
Thousands also gathered in Brooklyn, New York to honor Floyd's memory. George Floyd's brother, Terrence, spoke at the gathering in Brooklyn's Cadman Plaza.
I'm proud of the protests, but I'm not proud of the destruction.
Memorials in Minneapolis and New York were two of several gatherings across the country in memory of George Floyd.
A 10th day of protests brought peaceful rallies to most cities, though clashes erupted again in New York. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us now with the very latest. John, good morning.
Karen, thousands across New York City continued protests well past an 8 p.m. curfew. Large gatherings continued into the evening in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the Bronx. Police arrested dozens after confining and then charging demonstrators who defied the curfew, though there were fewer violent confrontations than in days past. Upstate in Buffalo, New York, video of a confrontation between police and a protester has gone viral. Footage shows an elderly man pushed to the ground by police. He hits the ground and a pool of blood forms near his head. Two officers involved in the incident have been suspended. Millions have watched the footage, including New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who calls the use of force, quote, wholly unjustified and utterly disgraceful. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. In California, protests have turned peaceful, and that has local officials lifting curfews across the state. Here with more is Ed Baxter from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
San Francisco, Los Angeles anxiously taking the step and awaiting the results. In doing so, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti said, "I'm a little scared about that, but sometimes fear is what you've got to do." The ACLU, which had sued Los Angeles and the city of San Bernardino on behalf of Black Lives Matter for suppressing First Amendment guarantees to political protests and freedom of movement, applauded the end of the order. Sacramento, which was slow to put one in place, left its on. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. Turning to financial markets now, today's monthly payrolls report is the main event for investors. Economists predict a loss of 7.5 million jobs in May with an unemployment rate north of 19%. We get more from Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee.
The focus will be on the unemployment rate, which should rise to a level not seen since the Great Depression. May's actual job losses should be about half the number seen in April, although they will cover more industries. Unemployment will spread from restaurants, bars, airlines, and hotels to retail and other businesses hit by a prolonged loss of demand. The hope is that as bad as the numbers will be, they will mark the bottom of the crisis. The slow drop of initial jobless claims suggests job losses may be more limited in June. That may help unemployment decline at least a little this month. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thanks. Global stocks are rallying in the wake of fiscal and monetary measures out of Europe, and now we're learning more about plans for the next round of stimulus from the White House. Here with details is Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Sources tell us Trump administration officials expect to spend up to $1 trillion in the next stimulus package. The president says he wants an infrastructure package in the bill, though we are told he has not made a final decision. Action on the measure is likely more than a month away. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says there are no plans for a package until after lawmakers return from their next recess on July 20th. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Oil gaining as OPEC and its allies prepare to extend production cuts. There's been a breakthrough in negotiations after Russia and Saudi Arabia struck a deal with members on compliance quotas. We get more from Bloomberg Energy reporter James Thornhill.
Really what the wrangling has been over is trying to get these junior partners in OPEC to carry out their side of the bargain in order to get an agreement on extending the output cuts by a month. It remains to be seen, of course, whether a month will be long enough to maintain the price rally we've seen, but it looks like this deal will get rubber stamped over the weekend.
And NYMEX crude oil at $38.07 a barrel.
On the corporate front, shares of American Airlines are surging in early trading. The carrier says it'll boost July flights 74% compared with this month. That has American shares up nearly 14%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And at 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Amy Morris for a check of what else is going on around the world. Happy Friday, Amy.
All right. Happy Friday, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is concerned that the crowded protests with thousands of demonstrators could lead to more COVID-19 cases. He says protesters have an obligation to get tested for the coronavirus.
If you were at a protest, go get a test, please. The protesters have a civic duty here also.
Fewer people in New York are now being hospitalized for COVID-19, and some stores in New York City can reopen starting Monday, but some of the biggest stores won't. Coach Kate Spade, Stuart Weitzman will not be opening any of their fashion boutiques, and major retailers say they aren't opening for curbside pickup on June 8th, which is when the first phase of recovery is set for New York City. Macy's says they plan to participate, but they're just going to take this day by day. New Jersey's non-essential retail business can open starting June 15th. Stores will be limited to 50% capacity. Customers are required to wear face coverings. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy announced the latest step to restart that economy as the virus put more than 1 in 9 New Jersey residents out of work since mid-March. As businesses prepare to reopen, the governor says social distancing must remain the routine. New York Police Commissioner Dermot Shea says the violence seen at the protests is, quote, not what democracy looks like. He says the incidents are part of a larger anti-police sentiment fueled by online rhetoric and misinformation.
Let's be a little mature and a little responsible. And before you start commenting on a 6-second video, do a little homework and get the facts.
And a judge in New York has ruled that the New York Police Department can hold protest detainees for more than 24 hours. Judge James Burke says curfew violators and criminal looters can be kept in custody because of the pandemic preventing live arraignments, which causes delays. Job losses and pay cuts impacted all of America, but the worst of it might have been in New York, where almost half of all residents suffered a drop in income, especially in households with children. 55.7% of all New York City households took a hit. Service, retail, and blue-collar workers who can't do their jobs from home suffered the most cuts. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Amy, thank you. It is 5:09 on Wall Street and time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stanshaw.
All right, good morning, Nathan. The NBA voted 29-1 to approve the plan for the season that was shut down March 12th to resume. 22 of the 30 teams will head to Orlando on July 7th and begin games there July 31st. They'll each play 8 games over the next 16 days. The results added to what was done earlier, and then the regular season will be over and the 16-team playoff will begin. The players on board, Commissioner Adam Silver said he had them in the loop throughout, although Union Chief Michelle Roberts did say she was not aware of a plan to start the 2021 season as early as December 1st. But for the most part, harmony in the NBA as opposed to Major League Baseball. The owners keep rejecting player proposals and vice versa. The union, after a two-hour conference call yesterday, quote, roundly rejected MLB's latest pitch. They feel there was already an agreement in place back in March not to cut pay. Drew Brees apologized not once but twice yesterday, first in a lengthy online post and then again later in the day in an Instagram video.
I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our black communities.
Brees said his comments about kneeling during the national anthem completely missed the mark. John Stasia with Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thank you. And join us tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show when we'll speak with Jim Van Stone. He's the president of business operations and chief commercial officer at Monumental Sports. You can catch that conversation tonight at 7 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. on Bloomberg Radio, or listen to it anytime by subscribing to the Bloomberg Business of Sports show wherever you get your podcasts. Futures moving higher ahead of the May jobs report release. S&P futures up almost 30 points right now. Dow futures up 363. NASDAQ futures higher by 54 points. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. Get better at giving back. To find out more about JCF's impact, visit jcfny.org and download the Giving Report. JCF has a gift for giving.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by SEI. Imagine your asset management firm's operational infrastructure as a competitive advantage. Let SEI show you how at seic.com/IMS. Stocks are rallying while treasuries and the dollar fall as investors focus on government stimulus and shrug off an upcoming U.S. jobs report that is expected to show the highest unemployment since the 1930s. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 23 points, Dow futures up 298, NASDAQ futures up 36. The DAX in Germany's up 1.5%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 0.85%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.20%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2% or 74 cents at $38.15 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Thank you, Karen. Demonstrations continued into the night as protesters ignored curfew warnings. Let's get a live report now from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
And Amy, there were large protests throughout New York City. Police surrounded a group of protesters in the Bronx defying a curfew and then charged at them as they refused to disperse. Dozens were arrested. Buffalo's police commissioner suspended two officers after a video of them knocking over an elderly protester went viral. Elsewhere, protests were mostly peaceful nationwide. In California, cities and counties cautiously lifted curfews after days of sporadic mayhem were replaced by peaceful protests. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, John. Other news we are watching for you. President Trump's re-election operation plans to begin in-person voting and training and voter contact in some parts of the U.S. next week. For the first time since the coronavirus outbreak, the Republican National Committee says volunteers will follow local guidelines, wearing masks, limiting headcounts, and social distancing. And Trump administration officials increasingly expect to spend up to $1 trillion in the next round of economic stimulus, although action on the measure is not likely to happen until at least next month. The president wants the legislation to include an infrastructure package. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Amy, thanks. It's 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager, joined now by Wendy Schiller, chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University, at a time where it seems like the country has been, it doesn't even seem like it, Wendy, the country has been through so much, among the street protests now, on top of the coronavirus recovery, job losses. It seems almost crass to ask where this leaves President Trump politically, but I mean, that is a question this morning.
Well, I mean, President Trump's campaign is, I mean, if you think of pure campaign strategy, very well funded. He won once and he defied all expectations. So the idea that Trump will decide, oh, I have to pivot, I have to change my way, I'm going to lose, I don't think that's in his psyche. I don't think that's in his perspective, because whoever tells him he's going to lose, he'll say, well, you thought I was going to lose last time. And I think it's very interesting about ramping up sort of campaign on the ground operations. You know, Trump has to figure out a way to get people to believe that things will get better if they give him four more years, because things look like in America right now they couldn't get much worse. And that's a big challenge for him. But in terms of normalizing, having somebody knock on the door and say, what do you think about President Trump? He's a good president, makes people, or could make people in some parts of the country, feel like things are getting more normal.
We had the backlash among even some Republicans this week to the president's pretty heavy-handed approach to the demonstrations, bringing in the military in Washington, D.C. Is that something that could hurt him if we have people like his former defense secretary and now Lisa Murkowski coming out against the president's tactics?
Well, I think there's a pretty significant and serious question for people who are concerned that Trump wants to use the military, for example, for domestic law enforcement. Ethan, we've talked about this. That's against the law, against the spirit of the Constitution. You know, that's where you have to start thinking, would the military support President Trump? Would the military themselves follow those orders? Would they, in fact, overrule, you know, state police, local government, state government? I mean, those starts to be, you know, the unraveling of the democracy. That's an extraordinarily serious question. That's really, I think, distinct and separate from whether a couple of Republicans in the Senate criticize the president in a fairly tame way, frankly, and probably will continue to vote for his agenda if he puts one forward to them.
We've seen the president spending money in states that he might have thought were going to be easy wins compared to, you know, 4 years ago. A little bit of a reversal on that. Where is he most vulnerable right now?
Well, yeah, it's a perfect question, right? Because we're looking at, well, sort of the end of May, early June, and those polls, you know, they can stay steady. We know that in Obama's reelection campaign, the polls in June were about the same as the polls in November and about the same as the outcomes. So things sort of settled in June and didn't change. Places like Ohio, you know, Trump is behind slightly in a Fox News poll, you know, another news organization. That's, you know, maybe the poll is, you know, not super accurate, but it's a fairly probably Republican-leaning poll. And the problem for the Democrats is that Republicans may stop answering the phone. You know, real Trump supporters may say, I'm not answering a CNN poll, I'm not answering a Gallup poll, but I might answer a Fox News poll. So watching polls, even, you have to look for partisan slant. But he's behind in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, and even in Ohio and Florida. And you have to ask yourself, even if the margins change, why is he behind? You know, these are states he won last time. And that's what the campaign, that's especially what the Trump campaign, is going to try to figure out. And that's how they're going to target their messaging going forward.
In our last 30 seconds here, though, he's not behind in fundraising. That's got to count for something.
Well, exactly. On-the-ground organizing. That's what I mean. Getting out the door, contacting people. Biden still in the basement, theoretically, although he seems to be emerging a little bit more. And does he have the on-the-ground when maybe a lot of those people who might volunteer for the Democrat Party are consumed by sort of the emerging, you know, the current crisis surrounding George Floyd? So the question is, how does the Democrat Party reshape its energy towards the campaign? And that's a challenge the Democrats, I think, have yet to figure out how to meet.
Professor Schiller, always good having you on. Thanks so much. Wendy Schiller chairs the Political Science Department at Brown University. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. Now it's time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Today we're looking at Minnesota's Attorney General filing a new, tougher charge of second-degree murder against the former police officer responsible for the death of George Floyd. He's also charged the three other former officers at the scene with aiding and abetting second-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. For more on the charges, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to former federal prosecutor Ellie Honig.
Ellie, let's talk about how this was handled. Prosecutors initially charged just the one officer with a lesser charge. Could they have brought these new charges against all four officers from the start and perhaps helped to quell some of the protests?
Yeah, June, they could have charged this as a second-degree murder from the start, and I wrote a piece the day after the initial charge came out saying they should have charged second-degree from the start. I'm not sure what impact that would have had on the riots. That's a complicated question. So the initial charge came from the Hennepin County attorney, which is sort of the local DA, essentially. If you looked at that complaint, it was baffling in some ways. He left out really important evidence of guilt. For example, the initial complaint lists some of the things that George Floyd said while he was pinned down, but it omits the most important things he said, which were, "I can't breathe," and "please don't kill me." As a prosecutor, that's inexplicable why you would leave that out. So I had my doubts about, at a minimum, the competency of the Hennepin County attorney. Now, a couple days after that, the Minnesota State Attorney General took over the case, which I think was absolutely the right move. And then a few days after that, he added a second-degree murder charge, which I think was the right move. I think it's supported by the evidence.
How did the AG frame that second-degree murder charge?
The way that the AG charged that second-degree count is smart. It's clever. It's tactically smart. There's two ways you can prove a second-degree murder charge under Minnesota law. The harder way is to prove an intentional killing. That's not the way he charged it. The easier way is to prove there was an intentional assault that resulted in a killing, and he charged it that way. So I think he's doing what every prosecutor should do. You look for the highest, most serious, applicable charge that you feel confident you can prove.
There are two medical examiner's reports, and there are differences in them, though both conclude it was homicide. Tell us about the differences and how the defense might use that.
Yeah, this is a boy, as a prosecutor, you just sort of roll your eyes and go, oh, no, not this. Because you never want competing medical examiner's reports, because then it becomes an issue in the case. So as I understand it, one of the reports concluded that the cause of death was essentially a heart attack or some combination of a pre-existing medical condition along with the physical actions taken by the police, that it was sort of a combination. That was the original report. And then the later report that the family had done says it was asphyxiation, suffocation, cut off of oxygen or blood to the brain. So there will be a fight over which one of those is real. But the bottom line, though, is either way, the prosecution should be fine.
And that's former federal prosecutor Ellie Honig speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures on the rise, up 25 points. Dow futures up 320. NASDAQ futures up 38. The DAX in Germany's up 1.8%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 0.85%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.20%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2% or 73 cents at $38.14 a barrel. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.